Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. Well, today I'm really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Jacqueline Rainey. She's the author of Through Whose Eyes, Rise, Child of God. The book is a compilation of short stories that are very personal to Jackie because, although fiction, she based some of them on her own experience. She covers incidents of sexual abuse, substance abuse, addiction, depression, and foster care. She also leads her readers to have faith in God, the end solution for hope and strength. But before we talk to Jackie, I'd like you to know a little bit about her. Although she lives in Massachusetts, Jacqueline Rainey is quick to say that her true place of birth is Georgia. She hit the foster system at age 13. After a brief stint in the Army, she made her rounds at a number of colleges and universities while struggling with psych issues, which also attributed it to her substance abuse and later becoming addicted. She was bruised, but she is no longer a broken woman. She walked through and sometimes crawled, fighting for hanging on for another day. The memories of child abuse, domestic violence, addiction, and sexual assault are heavy burdens for anyone to bear, but she is standing with God's hand. Even though her journey may not have been one of comfort, the Lord told her that she should now enjoy the journey. Hi, Jackie.
Hi.
Well, this is going to be a really interesting conversation. A lot of my topics that I really, you know, are close to my heart, so I'm really glad we're going to be talking about this. Now, before we get going, let's just talk a little bit about your book. And so if you would just give us a brief synopsis of what Through Whose Eyes, Rise, Child of God, it's all about.
It's mostly short stories on just spiritual guidance and how people come to awareness about the problems or issues they've been facing in life and how God plays a major role in them coming through those problems.
And what are some of the major roles that are depicted in your short stories?
Well, for instance, in my first story, Turning Corners, which is about a streetwalker. You know, she's been that way since she was a young girl, and basically she's been hearing, you know, the feeling, the pull of God on her life to change her life, and she doesn't really get it until she ends up in jail, you know, one last time. So, and she finds it through, you know, finally breaking down, and she prays, and she finally has that opportunity to pray, and then that's when, you know, finally God touches her spirit, and she's able to see that, okay, you know, I need to change my life now.
So let's just talk a little bit about that. And you're talking about this person being a streetwalker, and so we're going to kind of relate that to, although I know your book is fiction, these are fictional stories, these are also reality.
Yes, they are. Very much so.
Exactly. And it could be anybody's story, really. Mm-hmm. And let's just go a little bit further back to, you know, streetwalkers. Why do these women become streetwalkers?
Well, I mean, in my experience, and I did write from some of the things I saw, and some of the women that I was with, you know, my time out, you know, suffering through my own addiction. And, I mean, these were women who had been through some traumatic events, some of them from, you know, early age, being left or beaten by their parents or abandoned by their parents. Or these were women who had been raped or, I mean, just some very traumatic events that caused them to just react and act out in just a different way.
And that seems to me that that's just sort of a common trend in many societies, cultures, you know, not only in the United States, but in throughout the whole world, that women are actually, you know, there's a lot of women that are abused and raped, and it's really disheartening.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I mean, I've had my own experience with what I call it sexual assault. And, I mean, I did some things that wouldn't seem normal to a person who hadn't been through that. But, you know, and it didn't seem right to me at the time. But I went and I talked with someone and I got some help with that. And I, you know, what I found out about myself is that it was normal for me to react the way I did.
And would you be willing to share some of these reactions that you had?
Well, for instance, I mean, this one here, I don't know, you know, a little, people might be a little shocked, but for some reason, I found myself wanting to get back into cars because I thought that if I can do it, if I could just do it over again, I have a do-over, that I can make the outcome different. But at the same time, yeah, so while doing that, I was actually putting myself in harm. I knew I was, but I just needed somehow to try and just have my own control over that situation to make the outcome different.
It's almost like, you know, the new buzzword now is rewriting the script.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know, when you first said that going into a car, I sort of thought, well, you know, when we get thrown off a horse, it's always, you know, we're told to get back on the horse.
Right, right.
Now, you know, in your instance, and what you're talking about is, yes, definitely get back into a car, because I'm sure that there's probably a lot of fear getting into a car. But
mm-hmm.
also, like you say, you could also be putting yourself in harm.
Right, right.
And so how does one make that judgment?
Well, you know, I honestly, for me, I'm going to just speak from my own experience.
Of course.
Is that, I mean, my thinking wasn't all that clear, you know. I can admit that because I was going through some things. But I think I was just doing what I thought I needed to give me that kind of peace or something, you know. If I could just do that, then okay, now everything would be okay. Type of thing. And even though I knew I was putting myself in a dangerous situation, took back seat. It was more important for me to try and have a different outcome because
right.
I thought that's what I needed to move forward.
And did it work for you?
no, it did not.
No.
But I would say that God was watching out for me because in those few situations where I did, you know, try and have a different outcome, I mean, nothing ever happened.
Right.
But, as they say, God watched us out for those, you know. And so he was watching out for me. And then that's when I ended up, I went and I actually talked with someone. I went and talked with a professional, and I admitted. I said, this is what I've been doing, and this is what happened. And,
uh-huh.
you know, I was afraid that I was going to be looked at like I was, you know, forgive the word, crazy.
Right.
You know, like something was wrong with me. But this person, they actually understood, and they said, well, you know, what you did is a normal reaction.
Uh-huh.
And so it made me, it kind of like, it took some of the power away from that whole situation.
Right, yeah. And you probably felt empowered yourself and validated.
Yes, exactly. Because
yeah.
then I knew, okay, I'm not crazy. So, well, oh, definitely.
For sure. So I understand that one of the stories also in your book is about addictions and substance abuse.
Yes, it is. It's called I Used to Be.
Uh-huh.
And that story is actually based very, very closely on my own experiences, my own life. With struggling through addiction and coming through it.
And so are you willing to tell our listening audience what your addiction was to?
Oh, by all means, because if I don't share, you know, the message is to try and let other people know not to be ashamed, don't be afraid, get some help, because you don't have to live that way. But my substance of choice was crack cocaine.
Oh, that's a biggie.
Yes, it is. It is. It is.
And okay, so, you know, whatever the circumstance, people get into using crack cocaine and,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's all kinds of things. But then on the other end of it, obviously, you're not using anymore. And would you tell our listeners, like, where was that breaking point? It's like, okay, enough, or did you have an intervention, or, you know, what happened?
Well, I mean, for me, it was early on. I mean, I ended up into the substance. It was a gradual progression for me.
Uh-huh.
It was just like this TV commercial they had on years ago about, okay, if you smoke marijuana, you'll end up doing another harder substance, and that's what it was.
Uh-huh.
I started off on the marijuana and then the drinking, and that came about for me because I was an abused child, and I had, you know, some other issues sexual assaults, domestic violence, things going on. And so I was really trying to, you know, I wanted to be numb. I didn't want to remember or think about any of those things because they were very painful. But so I ended up there into the crack cocaine because the one substance stopped having the effect that I needed. It stopped working.
Well, that's a story so many say.
Mm-hmm.
The one stopped, working because your body obviously was just getting immune to it.
Right.
And so you needed more.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, eventually that stopped working too. It did more than stop working. It turned on me. Instead of it numbing me,
uh-huh.
it magnified my feelings of my hurt and my anger. It just turned on me and magnified that. So,
wow. And so what was the end result of this magnification?
Wow.
Putting it lightly.
But, I mean, even through that whole process, there was early on, I knew it just wasn't my life. And those are the words I'm using because that's the way I heard it and I felt it.
Uh-huh.
This is not my life. And so I wasn't the typical people, like the ones I was with and the ones I know out there. I wasn't an everyday user.
Mm-hmm.
I was more like, okay, a binger, I guess, you know, like a binge drinker.
Yeah.
I got to the point where I was more terrified of what was going to happen to me watching these people. And I didn't want that, and I knew it wasn't my life. And so every now and then I would stick myself in a detox or a rehab.
Did you? And you went,
yes, I did.
You went yourself?
A number of times because I just knew it was not what I wanted, and I just refused to give up.
You know, that's interesting because not very many people say that. In most cases, there's an intervention.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, of some sorts, either the family intervenes or the judge orders or something mm-hmm. like that. But it touches my heart to hear you saying that you actually attempted this on your own.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Now, I heard you say that you went into several times. So let's go to that first time that you went to rehab. What was your experience like?
Well, I believe the first time, my first attempt was it was a detox.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of strange because back then, they didn't see crack cocaine as an addiction where you could, you know, as something that would fall under that, like alcohol or heroin. And so I remember the counselors, you know, thank God for this, because I remember the counselors looking at me and saying, well, you're going to have to say that you are also an alcoholic in order for you to get any help. And so they really wanted to help me. But I didn't have a drinking problem. But if this is what I needed to get the help I needed, that is what I did. I said, okay. And so, I mean, I think that right there was an issue back some years ago. I don't know how they treat it right now, but it is a major issue.
I'm just, like, sitting here with my mouth open because I guess, well, at that time, it almost sounds like, you know, it wasn't really well known what this addiction really, that there was an addiction and what it could really do. So it must have been in the early years of when crack cocaine just started being used as a recreational drug. Yeah.
I was in such a naive state, that I remember when I was living in New York, I used to see these little vials on the ground. But it never occurred to me because, you know, I was in the military, so I didn't even know, you know, what was going on over here, as we used to call it, the world, because I was over in Germany.
Yeah.
You know, and unfortunately, there were so many people here in the United States who were suffering from that drug.
Yeah, yeah. How many times did you go to rehab?
Wow. I'm just going to take a guess. I mean, I know it might have been maybe at least five.
Okay.
I tried, you know, I refused to give up.
Good for you. Wow.
That's the key. You can't give up.
So
it will get hard. Don't give up.
Why didn't those five, the four prior to the last one work for you?
Well, because I was still trying to deal with my childhood issues and with the child abuse. And then even in the midst of the addiction, I had these other things happen. And, I mean, even before that, I had the domestic violence with my husband. So all of these issues were there. I was going through the treatments for the addiction, but I wasn't getting any help
for the real cause
that took me out there.
Yes. And that's unfortunately there are still rehabs that don't address the core issues. And really the core issue was to address, as you say, you know, the child abused and the, mm-hmm. all the abuses that you went through.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, the VA is very good about that, the Veterans Hospital.
Oh.
Because I am an Army veteran.
Right.
But, and that's where the connection came in because I didn't know. I didn't know that, okay, it was medical, and they said, yes, this is connected, this is why.
Mm-hmm.
But they are very good at treating. They want to treat both. Because
yes.
you're not going to have success if you're only treating one. You have to address both sides of that.
Exactly. And so is that where your final treatment was in the VA hospital?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
Wow. And how long ago was that, Jackie?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I was still seeing a therapist up until maybe 5 months ago
mm-hmm.
because I just felt it was something because I wanted to have a better quality of life.
Of course.
Because, see, when you come off the drugs and you're not using them as a crutch anymore,
mm-hmm.
that means that you're going to have to sit with you.
Oh, yes.
And you've got to sit with all those issues.
And you were trying to get away from them.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, they didn't go away, did they? They do not go away.
Right. I mean, I can laugh now. And,
yeah,
and
I know.
You know, because it's I've been through it, and I know that it will get better. You know, and that's what I'm kind of hoping that, you know, people will understand from this interview as well, is that, you know, I know it's going to be hard, but believe me, I swear to you, it will get better.
Well, exactly. And you're certainly a proof. I mean, you're telling me that you went to 5 different treatment centers.
Mm-hmm.
But you weren't going to give up. You knew that the end result, there has to be something where there's going to be a big change.
Oh, sure.
Exactly.
Oh, sure. Right. Because
exactly.
I knew that's not the life that God had for me.
Exactly.
And I have to tell this exactly the way it is. That was my true feeling on the inside.
Now, you just said this isn't what God had intended for you. When did you realize that?
Wow. Well, I mean, I think it might have been early on, because I believe, I don't have an exact number of years,
yeah.
but I know it was at least 10 or 12 years that I was stuck in that addiction.
Uh-huh.
But I was struggling through those whole 10 or 12 years or so trying to get out. But I knew, like, I think the first couple of years that it wasn't my life, but I knew the first 6 months that I had came up against something that I couldn't beat by myself,
mm-hmm.
because I told on myself. No one knew. No one, like, found out, oh, she's using. No, I told on myself.
Oh, you're kidding.
Myself.
Were that good at it?
Because I knew.
Oh.
I said something. This is not, you know, this is different. And so I told on myself. I told my baby brother.
Wow.
And, yeah.
You know, that's big. That's really big, Jackie.
Mm-hmm.
That's really, you know, that first step of getting out of denial and
mm-hmm.
seeking help. Wow, that's good. I'm glad to hear that.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. Join us and hear both well-known and upcoming writers talking candidly about their life experience as well as the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, we strive to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are available 24/7 through direct podcast as well as MP3 download for your convenience. Please visit us on InsideScoopLive.com. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with Jacqueline Rainey, author of Through Whose Eyes, Rise, Child of God. So far this has been really thought-provoking, hasn't it? It's very encouraging to hear firsthand from someone that has been abused and addicted and to come out on the other side and live a successful and fulfilled life. Stay tuned because there's more. So, did you have a religious background or spiritual background growing up?
Well, my mother, she tried,
mm-hmm.
you know. But then when I ended up in the foster system, you know, for the child abuse, it is so weird because the very first foster home I ended up in was owned by a pastor and his wife. And so we were forced to go to church, and but I didn't know anything,
yeah.
You know. And then I ended up in another foster home where the woman, she believed every child that came through her home had to be baptized, and so I was baptized. And then I eventually, when I got older,
uh-huh.
you know, I fell into church because I can't right now remember what happened, but I just knew, you know, something. And I should be looking up to a higher power, and that was God. And
uh-huh.
and I did get baptized a second time, and I believe it was August of 2005.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And God has become, my spiritual life is very important to me, and it's also very important to my sobriety, you know, and my everyday life and just moving forward.
So when you say higher power, this is something that the Alcoholics Anonymous and, you know, the AA groups use. Is that
yeah.
sort of what your concept is, too?
No, I mean, they use that as something, too. I think it's more they need something different, something above, something more of a focus or a motivation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, because in AA, a higher power, I mean, I've heard it said in a meeting once, they said you could choose that lamp if you want.
Yeah.
You can say, okay, that lamp is my higher power.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I can't knock that because whatever a person can focus themselves on that's going to get them through, then I can't knock that. I applaud them on that because you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
When you're struggling in those early days of sobriety, you need to hang on to whatever you can.
Yeah.
But I just chose, you know, to my spirituality, and I do believe in God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so explain to us what your God is like.
Wow. My God is an all-forgiving God.
Yes.
And he is he loves unconditionally. And I am very grateful because I look at it this way. I have fallen many a times, and he has always been right there. You know, and I give all credit to my church families, and that's what I call it, because being, you know, a child of the foster care system, I really relied on having a very good church family, a spiritual family.
Uh-huh.
So, and it's very important to me. Church has become that, not like the forms like AA is like an everyday.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, but we do what we need to do to stay sober. And for me, that's what going to church on Sundays and Bible study on Wednesday, and that's for me.
That's for you, and it works, and it just
yes.
it works. Yeah. I wanted to touch a little bit. You mentioned being in foster homes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, looking back now, so were you in, you mentioned that you were more than one foster home. Were you in quite a few different foster homes?
I believe it was maybe about 7 within a year.
No way.
Yes. I mean, and it wasn't because I was a bad kid.
No.
So, yeah.
So I'm thinking, and how old were you at that time?
I went in when I was 13.
Oh, my goodness. So here you are, this 13-year-old, within abused, obviously. That's why you were
right.
taken out of the home,
mm-hmm.
put into seven different foster homes within
about
a year.
Yes, yes. And that's because, see, back then, I don't know what's going on now. I don't even want to think about it. But the foster homes, there were a lot of people who were not in it for the right reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there were some homes where I should have gotten clothing stipends and I never saw a dime. And, you know, I mean, just some really bad things. And, you know, I'm just kind of praying that, you know, that someone is keeping a better eye, you know, a better eye on what's going on now and happening with the kids. But back then, the
wow.
places the very last foster home I ended up in
uh-huh.
was with a woman by the name of Helen Green. And she passed away many years ago from cancer. But she was the person who, she was the mother I always wanted.
Uh-huh.
She made me feel so safe. And I did put she is in my book, in my dedications,
uh-huh.
because she meant so much to me, and she really did a lot for me.
You know, at 13, I'm thinking, you know, this is just sort of that age that you're so vulnerable. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the place of still being a child, but then being a teen, and
right.
it must have been, you know, looking back now as an adult and looking at your experience,
mm-hmm.
you probably kind of wonder how you even got through all that. But what I'm hearing also is your last foster home, I mean, this is the mother that you always wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like that icing on the cake.
Yes.
Yeah.
But she was taken away, you know. But yeah. I believe that she gave me, you know, enough of what I needed to, to kind of push on. I mean, even though I did have some hard times after that, you know, it kind of broke my heart to think after the fact that, wow, you know, did she see all of this? And, you know, was her heart aching? But, you know, look how everything is turning out.
No,
you know?
Kidding. And, you know, the joy of your recovery. What do you find the most joyful now that you are in recovery and you are faith-based and you have this spirituality every day in your life? Like, what is the biggest joy for you?
Wow, the biggest. It's hard to just choose one.
Yeah, well, choose a bunch.
It is. I mean, for one, just sobriety period, just being able to just laugh.
Yeah.
You know, for one, because...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for me, because I was this person I used to feel, you know, I was afraid that if I laughed, that meant something bad was going to happen. I mean, or even just having a roof over my head, because now all my money is not going to a dealer. You know, food, I'm serious.
Yeah.
You know, so these things, and even just not, you know, the fog of depression is gone, and I'm not suffering the way I did with, you know, the past traumas and everything, and that is a true blessing,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I have some real joy in my heart. I mean, that's where the clarity came in to even be able to write, and I'm so grateful for that.
Yeah. I mean, what a turnaround. How many years have you been sober now?
It's been about two, mm-hmm. about 2 years straight.
Right.
Because, like I said in the past,
there's nothing.
That's right.
And so do you feel that, or is there ever a time that, I mean, we have our ups and downs. Let's face it, we're all human.
Oh, yeah.
Are there days that it's like that you're on that edge and that you could possibly use a substance to just sort of mask things?
It's not with the substance. I mean, because I have so much fear about that.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, there are those days when I do. You know, sometimes the things from the past, they do try to keep, you know, they try to creep up on me.
Yep.
You know, but, I mean, I have so much fear about what I saw out there and what I experienced that kind of keeps me from going out there. So, I mean, it's like when I suffer, believe me, I'm suffering, you know. But I do have some, you know, some techniques that I got from when I was in therapy, you know. You know, the counting and, you know, just in a past type thing. Get my Bible, watch a spiritual DVD, watch a movie, something, you know, anything to keep me from, you know, breaking and destroying the, you know, what has already been built up for me.
Exactly. And, you know, 2 years, I'm sure that there are days that even at, you know, 2 years from now, there'll still be days, but you have the tools and the desire that this is not the life that you want to go back to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But, well, you know, I've got to speak it the way I feel it. You know, the devil is tricky.
Yeah.
Okay. Especially when he sees that God has something for you, you know, so you, which is why I think that's another reason why, I mean, I enjoy church. Believe me, I love it. I don't feel right if I don't go. But it's another reason why I continue to go, because it keeps me strong spiritually, you know, and I'm able to work on myself physically because I try to work out, you know, walk a little bit on the treadmill. Some, you know, you got to just really take care of yourself, because when you're in that addictive state, the last thing you're really thinking about is really taking care of yourself. You might think you're thinking about you, but you're not taking care of yourself the way you should be mentally, physically, and spiritually.
So life now, what are the, you know, if you're just going to sort of put some really key words and strengths to what your life is like now and what you're really discovering and what you're looking at the future, what would those be?
Wow. Here's something for, I think, you know, maybe the women want to just keep this in mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm like, yeah, more a little more than mid-40s right now. And I never had any children, but I always loved children. I knew this since I was 11 years old. And so one of my biggest struggles right now is that I'm having faith. I'm standing on the promises of God, is that I'm going to at least be able to give birth to one child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, addiction will rob you of so many things. So the better, you know, the sooner you start to try and get some help, the better, you know, the better. But as for me, I mean, I think right now my life is pretty good, and it can only get better from here because of, you know, not just the writing, but my quality of life is better. I'm able to leave my home and smile, and, you know, I'm not out in the streets and panicking. It's just everything, life, quality of life is better for me, and it's only getting better.
And I'm hearing that. I'm really hearing that. Now, in your book, Through Whose Eyes, you said that you had, you know, a lot of the stories are reflecting to your own life, and you're sharing them with others. And I'm sure that you've had many people that have read your book in parallel to these stories.
Well, yes, I have. Mm-hmm. There, the people who have read, it's, you know, it's kind of strange. I mean, I actually had someone say to me, oh, that's me. That's my story. You wrote about me.
Yeah.
And, I mean, in a way, it's kind of scary because if they're saying that's their story, I'm just thinking about the pain they must have been going through and they must have been feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm hoping if that's their story, then, okay, that means they're going to come out on the other side of this spiritually and physically and mentally in a better place. Because that's what my hopes are.
Of course, of course. Now, so does each story have an ending where the person actually does find faith or, you know, another path?
Yes, and even though I know that's not always the case, but I you know, I mean, for instance, like in I Used to Be, I mean, it does kind of leave off with me, you know, kind of saying that some of the people out there have chosen to stay out there, but at the same time, they want to, because they're out there stuck, they want to drag others down with them. I mean, that saying is very true when they say misery loves company, and in the world of addiction, it's very true.
Isn't it? It is so true. It is so true. So, Jackie, some words of wisdom to our listeners. What would be okay, here it is.
I know they probably heard this before. But you can't give up. I know it will get hard. I know it. I know it. I know it. And I know you might feel like you're not finding the right people. No one wants to help you, but that is not true. You just haven't found that right person yet. Just keep trying. I also want to say I don't, you know, I'm not trying to push religion or anything on anyone, but, you know, just when you pray, I believe that God hears all prayers. Just don't give up is the key.
Mm-hmm.
If you can live without those substances, if you just give yourself that chance, even if you fall off, you can get back up because we're only human. We all make mistakes. Just get back up and try again. Just don't ever give up.
Well, you're certainly one that had never given up. I mean, being to 5 different treatment centers,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's definitely is something that, you know, we can look at. And it's like, no, you kept going until you finally got it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
And that's like what you say, you can't give up, don't give up. So that's some really good advice. And, yes, we probably all have heard it, but, you know, it's so true. Otherwise, it wouldn't be repeated over and over again.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
Mm-hmm. Jacqueline, your website address.
That is sbpra.com/ Jacqueline Rainey, and that is the official book site for my book, Through Whose Eyes, Rise, Child of God. I can also be found on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Great. Well, there you go, listeners. We've just been talking with Jacqueline Rainey and her recently published book, Through Whose Eyes. And as you've heard so far, you know, Jacqueline has really gone through a lot of experiences that I'm sure many of you can relate to. And as you had also heard, some of the stories are relating on about her own life, although they are fiction, the basis is actually of her own life. And so I really, really encourage you to check this book out. Again, it's Through Whose Eyes, Rise, Child of God. And the author is Jacqueline Rainey. Jackie, thank you so much for appearing on the show. And I know that your words of wisdom and inspiration are going to change some lives.
Thank you so much for having me.
And listeners, this is Irene Watson with Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.